Well, here's the presentation we published back this year in Langemeer, 2009. And we went through a lot trying to get this paper published. So I kind of take any challenge. I think I can receive more questions about this. Okay, here, the fast phase solving aluminum, you know, fast phase solving aluminum oxides and oxides are such an old subject. And so it's.
Please be conscious of the mic. Thank you.
Okay. It's a, such an old subject. And as you can see here, back in 1973, I guess this Dr. Chen is from Harvard University under Dr. Stone, I guess. And he noticed that this is sharp adsorption maximum on the aluminum oxides. And later, I guess from the same lab, it's Dr. C.P. Huang, he realized that, well, when the concentration is really low, you don't see that maximum. But as you increase the concentration, that maximum appears. And here's 1991, and Bling, he noticed that there's a sharp maximum on bromide too. And I checked the literature, even from the aluminum foil chips, you also see a maximum at pH 4. And obviously, this maximum has not been forgotten in 2002. And here, report another pH maximum at 4.0. So, except a Gibbs site, I did not find any maximum on that data. I find all this aluminum oxide and hydroxide. So, very interesting thing is that this maximum doesn't appear on iron oxides. Okay, iron oxide here is a gold site. You see, it's a maximum. I assume that we have done a lot of things, fast phase solution here on gold side. You will never see a maximum at pH 4. Here's my data back 2004. I don't see any maximum, but I see a minimum at pH 4. Okay, so concentration increases, that minimum disappears. Well, here's someone, he doesn't believe that, he believes there must be a maximum. So he goes down pH, all the way down to pH 1, or probably 0 is one more is already. He does see a maximum at pH 2. Okay. So here's another one. You know, you might question here, well, you have a maximum at pH 7. Yeah, that got me when one reviewer sent this to me. And I remember I saw this paper long ago. And but if you notice that the maximum appears at 2,000 micromoles per liter. That's really, really high concentration. So I would say that you can write another paper for this maximum, I guess. So basically, we're pretty sure that conclusion is that you don't have that maximum. However, something different between the aluminum oxides and iron oxides. For the aluminum oxides, your absorption behavior is relatively consistent, in not only between the samples, but also between types of aluminum oxides.
Can you put the microphone,
please? Oh, okay. All right. For the iron oxides, it not only the absorption behavior changes between the iron oxides, but also changes among the, for example, the hematite. You prepare the hematite differently under different conditions, you end up have a different absorption behaviors. So that's two huge difference between aluminum oxides and iron oxides. So here's the question I'm trying to answer. It got me into my brain for a while, basically. So why the absorption maximum appears on aluminum oxides and not on iron oxides, at least maximum 4? So why this maximum does not occur at low phosphate concentration, but it shows up and becomes such an increasingly sharp as phosphate concentration increases? So in order to try to answer this question, is that I picked two minerals. One is aluminum oxides, and the other is iron oxides. And I purchased from the lab instead of synthesizing myself, because I was trying to get a larger quantity of samples. And also, I want to try to get away from the, you know, sometimes people just stick to a one synthetic method, never changes. So you end up always the same results. So I just trying to try something else. And I did a five experiments. First, I checked the morphology, and then checked the surface structure with X-ray photon electron spectroscopy. And also I did a titration, and I checked the maximum, because one of the big questions is this sorption or just a precipitation? So last one, I did a batch experiment just trying to confirm, see if the absorption behavior is same as it has been reported in the literature. So here's is a surface morphology. As you can see here, that the hematite, the single crystal, it shows a typical hexagonal shapes. And alumina is aggregates, because this is used for chromatographic column. So it has a huge surface area, but a big particles. And here's the surface structure with XPS. I don't think I have time to go into the details, but as you can see on the left side is a hematite, and here's the alumina oxide. And this is a structure oxygen, and here's this hydroxyl. As you can see, hematite hydroxyl is 10 intensity is very low. However, in alumina oxide, you have a very strong surface hydroxyl peak. Basically, it suggests that your hydroxyl is also going to your surface. You see a phase transformation instead of just a top layer of hydroxylation. So what was the consequences of this phase transformation that occurred in the alumina oxide, which has been reported in several articles in recent years, including one article in the Science, that the consequences, because your hydroxyl getting to the surface, you not have a triple coronet hydroxyls. Okay, so here's a huge difference between the alumina oxides and the iron oxides. And for iron oxides, here's the 113 phase. We know the hematite have many possible crystal phases, and the surface hydroxyl configuration can be very, very different. This probably classification can cause a lot controversial, but this is based on my understanding of the literature, that single coronet hydroxyl is a Lincoln reactive, which means it can be replaced by an ion. The proton reactive can be protonate, produce surface charge. And doubly coordinated hydroxyl is non-reactive. It can be very controversial, make such a statement. But there are some ATN evidence basically support that, at least for the hematite. And for the triply coordinated hydroxyl, is not Lincoln reactive. Probably you should say at a certain concentration range, probably. But it's a proton reactive. So when you have a different such a surface hydroxyl configuration, you can expect that charging behavior and absorption behavior will be different. So here's the results we got, which basically confirm what has been reported in the literature. Here's the maximum. It doesn't see a maximum, and it gradually shows a maximum. For the hematite, you actually see a plateau, and then a concentration increase, you see a steep increase. It decreases the pH. Here's, as you noted, here's the total phosphate concentration. As we know, the total phosphate concentration is not equilibrium variable, so you cannot do a thermodynamic analysis with total phosphate concentration. So by interpretation, I just express the absorption as a pH and the final equilibrium concentration. You can plot it in two ways. One is that you plot it as absorption versus pH at different concentration of phosphate. And I included my old publication as part of this again analysis, is that you can see here for the alumina, you actually have a maximum 5.5. As you increase the concentration, shift to the 4.0. And here's a plateau to steep increase. And here's from minimal to steep increase. So we actually see two different behaviors among hematite samples, between two hematite samples. Okay, here's alumina. Here's alumina. At least it took me a while to realize that. One question is, why the shifts? What does it mean? So I just play and that realize that the curvature is different. Okay, as you use curve absorption like this, as the pH increases, the curvature going down like that. Okay, so if I go back, if the curvature is the same, here pH 5.5 will be always 5.5. So the reason the shifting is at a low pH going like this, at high pH going like this. So that's the reason you see the shifting. More interesting thing is I use a fractal equation because the coefficient represents the curvature. So I did some plot, calculate the curvature. Interesting phenomenon that for all these three oxides, the curvature is always increased twice from pH 3.0 to 6.5. So basically, it's an indication, probably the same mechanism, although it's different mineral samples. So actually, that you can break down that different behavior as two component behavior, one's increasing the curvature, which causes your pH dependent shifting, and why pH dependent absorption low phase concentration is different. Here, just trying to answer the question that it is not precipitation. And well, as we know, the surface absorption actually phenomenon is basically a chemical reaction occurring inside the electro double layer model. It's inside the electro double layer. So local concentration, bulk concentration are different. And the thing that's very complicated is that chemical reaction progresses, your surface potential changes too. We don't have that magical equation called the Nernst equation. So we need Nernst equivalent equation for oxides, basically. And we know that have a lot of models. So I'm trying to avoid using this model because we have a constant capacity triple layer model, which means we don't have the answers. So I'm trying to avoid using that model, see if I can answer. So I developed this equation. Left side is just a Langevin affinity constant, and the right side is a function of a surface potential. So I avoid using that double layer, but I cannot avoid it later anyway. I'm trying to use the qualitative surface charging features to get my answer. So I make three assumptions. The surface assumption replaces a singly quantity hydroxyl to form monolayer complex. This is such a big controversial thing. So, but recent years, we see a couple papers basically support the idea that actually it's absorbed as a monodentate complex. Second one is a singly quantity hydroxyl is almost fully protonated at a pH 7.0 because I'm only interested in the phenomenon at 4.0. And we do have a study in 2007, they use X-ray surface absorption. They found they think that single hydroxyl is fully protonated. And the number three is that fully deprotonated surface species is negligible at the pH 7.0. If you read that paper, basically says he go all the way up to 11, and then he found that fully deprotonated surface complex. So we make that assumption it's negligible at the pH 7. So once you always have these three assumptions, basically. Only reaction left is a protonation of the salt phosphate. So let's see if protonation of salt phosphate can provide answer to our phenomenon. So what I did is simply just that equation simply go down to this equation. Okay. So this equation, I don't want to go through the math here, but okay, the first term if you use only solve it as a protonated species, second term disappear. And first turn dominate. And if a non-protonated species, second turn dominate, first turn disappears. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to find out the characteristic behavior of protonation of the salt phosphate. First thing I need to do is I want to know how the protonation will change with the pH and the surface phosphate coverage. So what I did is because I want to know the relative contribution of first turn and second turn, so what I did is I make a ratio. I make a ratio. So the ratio is so if the first term dominate, the ratio will become big. Second term become dominant, ratio will become very small. And surprisingly, when you make a ratio, you get this simple equation. And if you want to know how the protonation of salt phosphate with the pH, you just make a differential with the pH, you come out with a really simple equation. As you can see here, if we move this down, this simply just the coefficient right before the Nernst equation. This is 59 millivolts. So this term basically represents a deviation of your surface charging behavior from the Nernst equation. If the Nernst equation apply, it's a 1. If the Nernst equation doesn't apply, it's less than 1. So we define this new variable, and we have a number which is basically less than 1, larger than 0. So you got this term. This term is very interesting here because this is always less than 0, which means the first term will always dominate as you decrease its pH. This is consistent that phosphate will be protonated. Phosphate will be protonated as you decrease the pH. Well, another assumption we make is that surface potential will decrease linearly with increased surface coverage. And you plot that equation into it, you will know that phosphate is absorbed as protonated species as surface coverage increases at a certain pH. Okay, if you make that ratio equal to 1, that logarithm of 1 is 0, right? So you will get this equation from 9. you got this linear equation. I already made assumption it's supposed to be a curve. Well, this line basically says, well, half of phosphate sulfate is a protonated species, half is as non-protonated species. So that's basically divided, and I've got a little bit of time right now. Okay, so basically what I'm trying to do is, here's the absorption isosine, because at least two zones, you can simply replace it with that single equation, equation 2 and 3. So you can figure out what is the characteristic behavior is. So you do a logarithm, you do plot this, and you got always, the plot is always at a low pH and high pH. If you do a plot, it should be twice differences. Okay, so I do all these three oxides. What I find out is that all they differ by twice, which means that it is protonation of a sulfur phosphate is responsible for increasing the curvature of absorption isosine. That's the reason you see the shifting. And you also want to see the pH dependence change from the low surface coverage to high coverage. You can also use that two small equation, and you do differentiate with pH, you come up with this equation. This is a mole fraction of phosphate, this is a known function, and this is the new variable, which is between 0 and 1, and which represents your surface charging behavior. So what I did is, here's surface charging behavior with aluminum oxides and iron oxides, and I did play some games. Basically, I found that three surface charging behavior. If you don't have a triple organic hydroxyl, your surface potential always reach a plateau. However, if you have a triple chlorine hydroxyl, if the difference is equal, larger than 3, you will see an inflection point here. And if less than 3, you will see almost increase linearly at almost 29 millivolts per pH. I try all kinds of model, basically like a synchron occlusion. So basically from here, you can predict how the surface charging behavior will change at low phosphate concentration and high phosphate concentration. This is simply just a little bit of calculus. Basically it says at a low phosphate concentration, you will have a maximum 5, and then you will have a maximum 4 as you increase the concentration shifting from here. So this is consistent. And if you increase almost linearly at 29 millivolts, you should see a plateau because here is in diminution already. And you see a maximum as 2.0. So you should change it from plateau to 2.0. And when you have an inflection point, you should see a minimum at 4. And as you change, you will see a minimum, maximum at 2. So this is consistent. So maximum absorption phosphate results from the absence of triple chlorine hydroxyl. And the gradual appearance of absorption maximum is due to the protonation of phosphate. And the application of a conclusion, what if we form a non-protonized specific complex? You see this maximum all the way up, it doesn't shift. If you form a proton lysophore but not protonated complex because your pKa2 is too small, you see all the way straight up, you don't see the shifting, you always see the maximum. Your pKa2 for the phosphate is 7.2, that's the reason you're shifting here. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.